house. So excited about having these young ladies in the house with us, Maddie and Tay.
Hello.
Thank y'all so much for being here.
Are you kidding? If I would have told my younger self, hey, you're going to get to hang out with Tracy Lawrence, I would have died. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And on your bus. This is really cool.
I know.
It's got a cool vibe to it. You know, we've done some taping in my pool house there when the bus has been at the shop or something, but it just doesn't have the warmth to me. I like the space.
Yeah.
There's something cool about the
bus. It's cozy, and it just,
It's been a work in progress, trying to figure out where to put all the cameras, and we just added a couple of new cameras, so we've grown a little bit since last year.
I'm just impressed, because this stuff is, like, really hard to do, and y'all have pulled it off all by yourselves, like, my gosh.
Well, there's been a few phone calls to photographers, and we've had to learn. There's been a couple of train wrecks along the way, banners falling down, and, you know, all the little things.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of figured it out as well, but it's been good.
Absolutely.
So we met Landon. Is Landon still working for y'all? Landon, I think, is that who introduced me to y'all?
Who? Landon Blows?
Yeah.
Lighting?
Or was it, it Scooter?
Oh.
Because we were at a package show, and the first time that I met y'all, and one of the guys, somebody that used to work for me worked for y'all at that particular time.
Okay.
But it all runs together. But it's been several years ago.
I know.
And y'all have done some amazing things in the last several years.
Oh,
when did
you
get signed?
We got signed in 2014.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's been several years.
Yes.
And you
decade,
just started your very first headlining tour last year?
So we did a headlining tour back in 2015.
Yeah.
And then we just, like, were really, really blessed on, like, getting really great tour slots. So we didn't... Yeah. We nurtured a little bit of the headlining stuff, like overseas and stuff. But then we got right back into headlining in 2022, I think. Yeah, 2022.
It fills our cup.
I love it.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
So do y'all have a package with you, or are you just going out playing theaters? What are y'all doing?
We're doing, like, theaters, some clubs, and we have Anna Voss is our opener. She's actually an incredible songwriter, artist here in town. And we're taking the babies with us.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's wild, because it's like, you know, we toured last year while I was super pregnant and Tay had her baby girl, and it's like, I was nervous about touring with babies, but it's way more fun because, I mean, it's a lot, but, you know, during the day, you know, it's just so boring, and
there's
three or four things that you can do, and then you're like, all right, well, what do I do for the other 9 hours today?
Yeah. When my wife and I started our family, we actually had the bunks taken out of one side on our coach and put a baby bed with a drop-down latch on it and had our baby monitor and everything set up so we could watch in the back. The whole thing was really padded and it was high so the kids couldn't get out. But our kids loved it. We stayed on the road with them for about the first 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then my girls got into competition dance, and that was all demanding.
Yes.
And so
you're a girl dad.
I'm a dance dad.
I'm
a two-girl dad.
Oh, my gosh.
My oldest daughter is 22, and she is finishing up her master's program at college in nutrition and dietetics.
Oh, that's my husband did. Yeah. Well, he did food science with, nutrition.
So she's finishing up her internship right now. She graduates in May.
Wow.
My youngest daughter will be 21 in April, and she is over in the UK right now taking some culinary classes, and she'll be back 1st of March, and then she comes back on the road. She's been setting up drums and doing stuff on the stage and helping out on the road.
Oh, my gosh.
So, that is so
they've come
sound
a long way.
So awesome.
So are y'all sharing a bus with the babies? What are y'all... surely you're not riding with all the band.
Oh, heck no. They stink. No, I'm just kidding.
They stink. They do for some reason. I don't understand.
Stink. You know, I will say
it's like a bunch of guys. It's like living in a locker room.
Oh, it is.
And they don't pick up after themselves either.
No.
And especially in the summer, those like dusty, sandy festivals.
Oh, and you're just tracking mud everywhere. It's just a mess. And oh my gosh, the guys, so whenever we are on two buses, sometimes we roll one if we're not bringing the babies, but if we bring the babies, then we'll roll like on our bus, and then the guys have theirs. But they're like, man, we miss the girls because they always have smell good stuff and pick up. And I'm like, I am not your mom. Like, I am your boss, actually. So pick up your damn cup and throw away your trash.
Has that been a hard transition, being a boss instead? Because I found it hard to not be a friend and a running buddy all the time.
Absolutely.
Because it does make a difference. There's a little bit of separation. Not them, though. They're different.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I feel like you've definitely struggled with that.
Yeah. T is way better with, like, boundaries and, like, you know, just, you know, no BS. Yeah. I sometimes, like, the water gets a little muddy for me because I just, like, want to, you know, be friends with everybody and have a relationship. And, you know, sometimes that's, like, a great thing for me because relationships are everything, you know? But then sometimes there's, like, a line where it's like, okay, you know, you're pouring so much into this person and they're just taking. Or, you know, where you just kind of have to. And luckily for us, like, all of our team, there's no one like that. But we've definitely had people in the past.
You have to weed those things out,
too. And be, like, protective of your energy and, you know, so just trying to. We've had to learn. I feel like the past couple of years we've learned how to, like, protect and, like, conserve our energy for, like, ourselves and our families and our shows, because man, it'll you just get drained so fast if you, like, one dud person, and they'll drain
it's like
you.
A cancer. It just sucks it out of you, and you go to bed thinking about it at night. And we've been fortunate. We've kind of weeded through, but it ebbs and flows. You go through periods. You know, everything will be rocking along real good for a couple of years, and then the wheels will fall off.
I know.
That's like every other day for us.
I know. Yeah, that's kind of our career. So we've really learned how to, like, catch a good curveball, but we've definitely taken a couple to the
We attract
chin.
The chaos.
I don't
we
know
really
why.
Do you really?
We do. We don't mean to. We are faithful women, and I be
like
praying all the time.
Crazy people. Our first ever tour manager that we had. I won't name any names now.
I wish we could.
We found out we were on tour with Dierks Bentley as, like, the opener to the opener. And we found out that whole tour, he was like, what was it with the money?
He was sending in fake receipts and ended up stealing $10,000.
Yes.
And we had to, like, send the police to his house, and he wasn't there. And then he sent a check that wasn't. It was a whole thing. But honestly, like, we're in the process of dreaming up, like, writing a book. And so I think maybe God was like, I'm going to give you some really good juicy stories for this book, and I'll bless you with your chaos.
You know,
I don't know.
It's just so hard. And I've been had people steal from me, people trusted. You know, it's a painful thing. But I think as you grow through the process, you learn how to put checks and balances in place. No one has complete access to anything. You've got to make sure that this one's watching that one. And there's, you know, where you really have to be careful. And it's just the temptation is almost too much for some people.
Oh, my gosh.
It really is. And it's a sad thing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, especially, you know, I got popped pretty hard early on by some managers for a good chunk, like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What?
And when it's, but, you know, they weren't really even embezzling it. They were just blowing my money on private jets and limos and flying girls around and doing all these things.
And then
a couple of years go by and you know, it's worth all. And my philosophy was probably like y'all, I just want to sing. I didn't do this for the money.
Yeah.
I trust y'all. Y'all take care of my stuff. And then we'll look at it somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
And then you do and you find out that they've taken advantage of you.
Oh,
and that's really
absolutely
painful.
Yeah, absolutely. We just actually switched management. You know, we're under the same management now. And it's just like the biggest godsend ever because, you know, just having good people like protecting those things. And luckily, I mean, I don't know if it's lucky, but I am like a super, I am like really cheap and very frugal and like very, I look at the numbers
every week.
Every week I'm looking at like what's in the account, what's not in the account, what's coming out. Sometimes it drives me nuts, but I don't know why I just like have always been that way.
I'm very aloof, so we make a good team.
Yeah,
right brain left.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, with the business
thing
side
one
of things,
and thing two.
Yes, exactly. She's like, you want creative design? Got it. And I'm like, I want to crunch numbers. Got it. Like, I mean, I'm not over here crunching all the numbers by myself, but I definitely keep my head on a swivel with those kind of things. And I don't know if you ever had this experience, but when you come from just like normal, humble beginnings, you know, like I still pretend like I'm broke and I'm not broke, but me and my husband, like, we're like, we haven't been broke since we were, you know, 18. It's a hard habit.
I carried a lot of guilt.
I really did.
I felt guilty about being successful.
Yeah.
And then seeing my family members struggle and other things. I gave a whole lot of cars away early on. And it was,
and
I had to get kind of out of that stuff because,
especially
my wife kind of put her foot down on some things. She said, you've got to stop trying to take care
of
everybody.
It's a slippery slope.
Especially when you have a family.
Right.
And you got a mortgage. I mean, because we all have bills. I mean, it's nice having money in the bank, but we still have things that cost.
Exactly.
And the older you get, you get a little bit older in years. years and you realize that you can't do the same things that you did 20 years ago. And you, if you don't take care of your money between now and then, you'll wake up one day and you won't have any. You see it happen to athletes and stuff all the time.
Absolutely.
That make millions and millions of dollars and then wake up 10, 20 years down the road and they're absolutely broken. It's a sad thing to see.
Absolutely. Well,
and I think some people get like wrapped up in the lifestyle of the glitz and the glamour. We realized how not glamorous it was very early on when we're playing the street corner and, you know, the crustiest of restaurants because we can't play the bars because we were only 16 and, you know, just stuff like that. And so we saw that early on. And so, you know, for us, we were like, we're going to be protective of like what we get and like what we're, you know, just aware as much as possible of all of those things, you know?
So y'all, when did y'all meet? Were y'all, it sounds like you were just teenagers when you met.
We're a little bit.
So Oklahoma, Arkansas?
Oklahoma and Texas.
Texas, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oklahoma and Texas. So how did y'all run across each other?
Can we tell the real story?
We've never told the real story.
Well, I want to hear the real story. Yeah.
Lindsay, you ready for the real story? Okay, this is the real story. We were media trained very early on when we got signed to Big Machine. We're now at Universal, so now that we don't have to follow their rules, we're going to tell you the real story.
And we just kind of had to make up a story because it sounded more appealing than the real story.
Yeah, okay. So the real story goes, I wanted to be a songwriter, and I found this vocal coach in Houston that had worked with like other singers, and like there was another gal in my town that or a family friend that was doing the music thing, and I was kind of asking her about it, and she was like, hey, this is, you know, talk to this vocal coach and this person's connected in Nashville, and so it just so happened that I like found you know a little door to kick open a little bit. And so I started going to these voice lessons, and the vocal coach was like, hey, there's these other girls that are, you know, at my Dallas studio you should meet. And I was like, okay. And so I had already gone back and forth to Nashville. I didn't know that you didn't have to pay for writing sessions. So I was paying to write songs with people. No. I won't tell the writers, but they were like, yeah. So, and then I found out, that's not how it goes here. Yeah. So, but anyways, so I meet Tay and this other girl. And the vocal coach is like, you know, y'all should experiment with like harmonies and, you know, be in a trio.
Simultaneously, I was going to that same vocal coach.
Yeah.
And he basically told me one session, he was like, listen, if you want to make it in Nashville, they are not signing solo artists. They want the next Dixie Chicks. Like, they need a trio. And so if you want to make it, this is kind of what you have to do. And
he
so
was,
I
was full
like,
of crap.
I was like, whatever. Yeah, sure. Tell me anything. Yeah, like,
That didn't happen for Reba. But there is a lot to be said about it. And from a label's perspective, as I've gone through the business side of this, if when you're putting a roster together, you want a solo male, you want a solo female, you want a duo, you want a female duo, male trio, you want bands.
Right.
Because that's the award platform that you're playing to. And those things are very relevant in the music business.
Exactly. Absolutely. And to be fair, there definitely was like a lack of, you know,
harmonies,
the girl groups.
And, since the Judds.
Yeah. Right. Since the Judds, yeah.
There was a need there.
The three of us all met in Dallas, and we instantly hit off. And the other gal was nice, but there was some...
She was just a little bit older, like her values and just sort of...
different.
What she was interested in was just different.
Different, yeah. And like her family was like... I'm just going to say a little crazy. Look, we're all crazy, but like our crazies weren't really meshing, you know? Yeah.
And our crazies
were meshing, yeah. And they
and
still...
And that's very important.
It's very... Because we're all crazy.
We're all crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
Without a doubt.
So long story short, we end up telling like the third girl, like, hey, we're, you know, not going to do this anymore. And then T calls me and she's like, hey, we going to do this, just me and you. I'm like, okay, cool. And so she wasn't like stoked about it, but I don't think her mind, like we were laser focused.
Yes.
We were like, let's chase this thing down. And she was like,
it's for fun.
Floating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more for fun for her. And we were like, this is what we want our life to be. So anyways, so once we do that, we start going back and forth to Nashville together. We're 15 and 16 at the time, and going back and forth and writing and figuring out harmonies and being in the studio, you know, all that stuff's really challenging in the beginning because, you know, when you're used to just an acoustic guitar and us and, you know, doing takes, you know, just all the learning curves.
Yeah.
And so we were doing that for a while, and then we started getting connected in Nashville because the writers that we were writing with that weren't making us pay were going around and being like, hey, there's these two girls, and they're really talented, and they're young, and, you know. So we met with a guy named Mike Molinar over at Big Machine Music, mm-hmm. who is still our publisher to yes. this day. Almost 15 years later, and he was kind of the one who discovered us and really nurtured our talents and yeah. like our vision. And yeah. So we, that kind of the rest was history, but we moved to Nashville together. Once it was like 5 days after I graduated high school, we moved to Nashville.
And we're only 3 months apart in age. Maddie's born yeah, in July.
So y'all graduated the same year.
But
what
I
year
was,
did you graduate?
I was a year behind in school. You graduated yeah. in 2013 and yeah. I would have graduated in 2014, but yeah. I ended up dropping out of high school and I just got my GED. Mm-hmm. And then I had to get emancipated from my parents to sign my publishing deal.
Wow. She was too young to sign.
It was wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
So you graduated in 2013.
I would have graduated
but right there. So y'all got your deals when you were basically 18 years old.
Yes.
Yes.
Once we turned 18, early.
We signed our record contract in the studio cutting Girl in a Country Song.
Yeah.
No kidding.
It was
and
bizarre.
So, but you'd done a lot of groundwork between the time you started coming up at 14, 15 years
yeah.
old.
Yes.
So you had made inroads and everything to it. So there was a little bit of a track record of several years of moving in that
definitely.
Direction.
Definitely. We were writing all day, every day, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We were
like
just...
two writes a day.
And intentionally writing. I mean, there were writes where we were like, what is our message as mm-hmm. Maddie and Tay? Like, what do we want to
like,
give
what's
to the
your
world?
Exactly. What's your going to be your theme or what's your...
Yes.
How do you want people to look at you? What's
yeah,
your...
exactly.
And it happened just so organically. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember one of the first songs we wrote together was called Roots and Wings, and it was
yes.
just like this really like sweet song about having roots and...
It was like, my head wants roots, but my heart wants wings. And our business is like, you know, named after that
yeah.
song. Kind of.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
Big Machine give you did they give you... how much creative control did they give you out of the box? I mean, if they'd been grooming you and working with you for a little while, did they let you spread your wings a little bit? Did they give you a couple songs? Did you have to fight for your stuff? Because that's early. You're very young to be stepping into all that.
Yeah. I would say immense creative freedom, because when it came time to cut our first record,
yeah.
We had already written it all from the time we were 16 to 18. It was
yeah.
all songs.
It was already done. Yeah. You know what was so great? I think we definitely could have gotten like chewed up and spit out, but... Thank God we had Mike Molinar yes. and Alex Heddle over yes. at Big Machine Music really protecting us and protecting our vision and who we were and who we weren't, and just going in these meetings that we weren't in and fighting for us and, you know, raising a flag when we didn't feel good about something, because we didn't hire a manager until after we were on radio tour.
Really?
So, yeah, it was – so yeah. we didn't know that you could say no. We didn't know that was an option. So we just, yeah, ran ourselves ragged. And then we were like, oh, you can say no? Like, you can say, you know. And then I was like, no. Just
how involved were your parents with you as you were going through this early process?
Super involved in the beginning. And then once we moved out, they, you know, they trusted Mike and Alex once they really got a relationship with them,
which must have been hard. I mean,
oh,
they were letting us go at 16 years old, basically.
And I'm leading that. I'm going toward a question, because we all know that this has been a male dominated industry for mm-hmm. a long time, and misogynistic people do still exist in this industry.
Know,
did
yeah.
y'all deal with any of that stuff early on, or were you pretty
yeah.
shielded from it?
No.
Because people tend to talk down to you, which and as an artist, especially
a young
female.
Oof.
So I mean, I didn't have to go through that.
Can you
explain that how that was for you?
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, it was not easy. It's very different now than it was when Girl in a Country Song came out.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one of like the many horror stories. We had a radio guy. We like sat down for the interview for, it was like ACMs or something,
yeah.
and it was the radio remotes. It was our first time doing remotes, and we're like, okay. So we sit down and he's like, all right, we're going to start this interview off by saying, how many men have y'all slept with?
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. yeah. Live.
Wow.
And I said,
and they think it's funny, and yeah. it's not funny.
Oh, yeah. We were humiliated. And I said, how many men have you slept with? And he was like, so uncomfortable. And I was
well,
like,
it should have been.
Yeah. And I was like, if, oh my, yeah, it was just a whole thing.
And what
so,
was sad was like, I was looking to our radio rep at the time and I was like,
Cut.
Like, obviously, we're not going to do this anymore. And he was just like, no, you got to do
it. Suck
it
up.
Like, he didn't step in. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that would be very frustrating.
So we get very protective of not just new female artists, but new artists in general, we try to reach out as soon as possible when things start taking off.
Always.
Lainey Wilson being one of them, being like, hey, we got your back. We love you. Yes. If you ever just need to like vent or, you know, just someone that gets it, like, you know, obviously we haven't reached her level, you know, but still knowing, we know how hard this business is, know that there's people who love you just as a person, don't need a dang thing from you. Just we're here and we love you. And we just try to do that because we had some artists that did that for us too. Dierks Bentley was one of them that really took us under his wing. And just, I still text him to this day and just check in.
He's such a good guy.
And, but yeah, that's something that like we feel passionate about. Cause in the beginning we just didn't, you know, there wasn't that community like there is now.
There's much more awareness now than there was even when I started in the early 90s. I mean, it was a whole different ballgame back then.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It really was difficult, you know, and I love Lainey too, but you know, just 3 years ago, she was opening shows for me and Justin Moore with an acoustic guitar.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, those overnight successes don't happen overnight.
Exactly.
There's years, grounded out for years to get to where she's at.
Absolutely.
But all the stars lined up and it just went boom. And it's amazing to see. I love it.
I love watching people win.
I do too.
I think it's sad when people, you know, one thing T and I will never forget about the Dierks Bentley tour that has stuck with us forever was one night we were talking outside of his bus and he had written on his arm in Sharpie, "Celebrate others." And I feel like maybe, I think his single was maybe not doing as good at radio as he was thinking, or like, you know, maybe his buddies, you know, you have those moments where your buddies pass you up and then things get weird, you know, just things like that. And I don't know if that's what was going on, but that's just kind of what I've like put together. But didn't you ask him about it? And he said, it's really,
he was just like, I was on the plane ride over here and I was struggling. So I just wrote this reminder to look at all day. And to us, I mean, Dierks is like
the king,
the pinnacle. We're like, oh my gosh, to think that he's in his position and still sort of struggling with that, comparing yourself to others was just like, I don't know, just really humanized him and really had us relate to him. And
but so, you know, we're all still dealing with the same things.
Absolutely.
The highs and lows of the business.
Yes.
And, you know, you have a hit record 1 week and then you can't get radio to play something. And let me tell you, at the end of your radio career, when you step away from that, that's a pretty big shock to the system too, after you've been watching records go up and down the charts for years. And then all of a sudden, what's the next stage of your life look like? I mean, because none of it lasts forever.
That's the key.
But as long as you always try, and guys like Dierks do, I mean, you can tell with Hot Country Nights and the way that they kind of make fun of themselves and take everything so lightly, that it's really good to not take yourself too seriously.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because none of this is real.
No.
It's not.
And I think, just like a shorter version of this, we were with Big Machine for, 2 years? And then our record label out of nowhere shut down. And so we were in the middle of making the sophomore record, which, as you know, is so much pressure. Yep. It's like, you got to follow up the first and you got to, you know. So we're like, oh my gosh. And I was struggling because my self-worth was so wrapped up in what I did and not who I was.
Yeah.
And so after that, I think T had a way better handle on it than I did, but I just really, you know, was like, I'm not enough. This is, you know, like, I just took it all, you know, on my shoulders, when really it was like, God was just like, hey, we just need to, we're switching roads here, and I just need you to let me take the wheel, and you just sit in the passenger seat and enjoy. Like, and I'm over here just fighting the change with everything I have, and it was the best thing that could have happened for us. And like, just through those hard times, we wrote Die From a Broken Heart, which, you know, went on to be this huge song for us. And it's just like, you can't, like, there's always purpose in the pain, and if your self-worth is wrapped up in what you do, that is not a good place to put your heart.
It really isn't. And this is an industry where everything is wrapped around, you know, what you do, how you look, how people perceive you.
Superficial.
It's very superficial. And there's times that if you come from a Christian background, like I can tell you, you both do, and I did too, that you struggle with it sometimes, because when you really get down to it, this is basically celebrating idolatry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I struggle with it still.
Yeah.
And it's not, I still get the rush out of going out there, and I still love it like we all do. But there's an addiction that comes with having success on the radio and all the adoration and the attention from the fans.
Yes.
And it's, when we went through COVID, I had the hardest time getting off the treadmill because I didn't want to accept we weren't going back to work.
Oh,
and
same.
I had an even harder time getting it going again after after we started work. How did y'all experience any of those emotions through that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say 2020 was probably your 2018. Like, and
yes,
a similar feeling that I had, because I remember we were having a number one with Die From a Broken Heart at the same time that we were supposed to be going out on tour with Lady Antebellum. And it was just like, I was ready to get that momentum going again. And like, finally, like, we're at it again.
Yeah. It had been 5 years between hit songs for us, which in the artist world is an eternity. Like, it's hard to get momentum. It's hard for lightning to strike twice, but even harder when 5 years has passed.
Mm-hmm. And I remember getting the phone call that, hey, like, this tour isn't happening and it's just getting canceled altogether. We're not even rescheduling it. And I sobbed. I'm pretty sure there's a video on my phone that I took of myself just crying and just processing. And it, I don't know why I took it so hard. It's probably, that's a good way of putting it. Getting off the treadmill was just like, I didn't want to. I was ready to just fight for this.
Yeah.
But I remember I texted everyone that meant a lot to me in my life. And I said, what are three words that you would describe me as? Because I need to hear that I'm more than just Tay of Maddie and Tay. Like, I'm Taylor, who is a mother now and a best friend, and I'm strong and I'm brave and all these things that have nothing to do with me being on stage. And it was hard. It really was.
I remember that text and being like, oh, she going through it. And I was like, she never, like, T is a very, I mean, it's taken me almost 15 years to peel back the layers of this onion. It is the never ending onion. And I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm like, here's my heart and soul. What do you want to know? Like, and it's this beautiful, perfect balance of like, we're each other's safe place in very different ways. Like, she needs me to bring her out of her little onion. Right. And I need her to be like, hey, we don't have to show the book to everybody.
You don't have to tell everybody all.
Let's, you know, some pages aren't for everybody, you know, and I'm just, you know, so, but it's a really nice balance. Yeah. But it's, you know, we both had the moments of like, I am not worthy because it was tied up in what we did, but it was just very, it was different years.
Yeah.
So we like flip-flopped that feeling. And I remember her calling me and I had already like kind of processed some of that. And it definitely came back up, like the purpose stuff. And I was like, God, that's exactly how I felt when the label shut down. And so we just both like clung to each other. And you know what we finally made time for was fun.
Yes.
When we started a band in 15, we had no days off. Like, we wrote,
we were all consuming. All you can do.
And then when we became businesswomen, we didn't have time, you know, for, we used to like go shopping at the mall or go to the movies, you know, just like fun stuff. And we were like, you know what? We can't do it. Like, let's just have some fun. And God forbid we have some dang fun, you know?
We had fun.
Oh, we did. We did.
You got to do that. You got to have balance. You know,
When I
first hit and things started rolling for me in the early 90s, I got to spend a lot of time with Tanya Tucker. And I loved her dearly. She was still pretty wild back then.
Yeah.
But being around her at a later age of life, you realize Tanya had a huge career, and she was on the radio at 14 years old.
Whoa.
So
I didn't realize that.
She didn't go to the prom. She didn't get to go out to the movies and go on dates. She missed a whole section of her childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so she spent a whole chunk of her life trying to find that.
Yeah.
And so you sacrifice so much when you start this at a young age that you don't even realize you're doing it at the time because you're so hungry and you dream it and you want it so bad.
Absolutely.
That you wind up missing out on some
things.
You
do. And it is weird for me to realize that we were child stars. Like, it's
like
just
we
like,
were babies.
It's just weird. Like, I don't want to think about us that way.
And it gets worse when your kids get to the age that you, and then you go,
oh
my God, you're 14. I remember when I was 14, I thought I was a whole different thing, but you're just a little baby.
Mm-hmm. I know. And it's like, thank God we had each other, you know, because we, you know, everything has gone. It has gone up and down, all around, freaking disaster, freaking super huge.
The
music, yes. But through it all, we've had each other. And that's been the constant. Like, our, like, unconditional love of, like, our sisterhood and our friendship does not shake.
I mean, we say every day, we're like, if this all goes away, like, we're still in this together.
Yeah.
Like, in this life. We're best friends. We're sisters.
Yeah.
Very special
things. Yes. Like, gun to our head, you have to pick being friends or this career. our friendship friends. Every single time. Yeah. The career can kick rocks if it has to. Like, our friendship comes first. And, I mean, we don't want it to kick rocks because it pays our bills. But if it did, we would always choose each other over that. Because it's just, you know, chosen family, which is such a blessing.
I want to go back to some of your hometowns. You're from Sugar Land, Texas, and you're from...
I'm from Ada, Oklahoma, originally.
Ada, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, you look like a very good friend of mine. Lacey Chandler. Do you know the Chandler?
No, I don't.
She is from Ada, Oklahoma, too.
But no
she
way!
Gets that a they lot. Live right there in that house. It's right inside of her gate. She is
what
the
if
dance
you got a surprise cousin?
Where our children danced. They, her husband and her on the dance
Wait,
studio.
That's crazy. I'm trying to think of any Chandlers that I know from Ada. I don't. But I smiled because every time I meet somebody, they're like, you look like someone.
You could be
someone.
Lacey's baby sister. I'm telling you.
Oh my gosh. How cool. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But so, my family moved from Ada to Durant when I was like 14. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know where Durant, Oklahoma is?
I do know where Durant, Oklahoma is.
Choctaw Casino.
I had played a lot of, and back then there was like the Arbuckle Ballroom.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember Arbuckle?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that in Ada?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had some big times
in Ada. The McSwain Theater. Yeah.
So I remember cool. Can't Break It to My Heart was written in McAllister, Oklahoma, which was a big record for me.
Wow.
I wrote the chorus in the line at the Western Sizzling and wrote it on a paper napkin in the tray as I was going through the line. We'd stop for lunch.
Oh, what a story. That's so cool. Cool.
Wow.
So we spent a lot of time. I grew up in Southwest Arkansas, which is right in the furthermost corner of Arkansas. It borders Texas. Texas, the Red River borders in between Texas to the south, and Oklahoma is about 7 miles to the west.
Wow.
So I grew up in a dry county, but you could buy beer in Oklahoma when you were a teenager.
Oh my gosh, that's
But that's
awesome.
Ida Bell and Broken Bow and all that area.
Okay,
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, Ida Bell and Broken Bow.
Oh my gosh, that's
Y'all ever
so
run
cool.
around down there?
We did. I remember when I did track back in like middle school, Broken Bow was like my competition. It was
Broken
so
Bow
funny.
Lake. Broken Bow Lake is a beautiful place. Y'all ever get to chance to go there. And they've done a lot of development there, a lot of cabins and things.
We go kayaking down there a lot. It's beautiful.
That's awesome.
This is random, but have you ever heard of Garner State Park or like Concan, Texas or anything like that? Mm-mm. Okay, well, it's just funny because like I was saying, my younger self would be dying had I said, hey, you're going to like sit and hang out with freaking Tracy Lawrence, because there's this thing. I grew up going to this little like river town, and it was real small in the beginning, and now it's like booming. But
like New Braunfels or something like that.
Yes, it's like it's basically a New Braunfels, but like a little more quiet, a little more laid back, more family friendly, I would say. And so we would go to this thing called the Garner Dance at the state park, and it was like this, you know, little. You know, just a little dance floor, like in the trees and everything, and all it was literally like it was either you or George or Kenny, and that's I learned to dance from your songs. Like I learned how
it's
to two-step.
Music,
oh my gosh, yeah, and I'm like,
mid-tempos and waltzes.
Oh, time marches on every time that, and like it was a very. It was a very crucial part of my childhood because this dance, this dance, you had to go up and ask someone to dance. Like, so you had to like
a Sadie Hawkins.
Yes, yes. But like either a boy would come up to you and would you like to dance, or you would go, would you like to dance? And it teaches you like confidence, you know?
You know all about that, don't you, Junior?
Absolutely.
You do?
So these guys back here, we call him Junior, but his name's Derek. Derek plays second guitar in the band. He does all the audio. Scott's the piano player in the band. He does all the videos.
Oh my gosh.
So these guys are on the road with me all the time.
Wow, the next time our band guys complain about doing something extra, I'm going to be like, you know what Tracy's guys do? So y'all better hush up.
They have a big time. They do enjoy all of it.
That's amazing. But yeah, so I just remember there were so many of your songs that would play, and we'd be two-stepping, and you'd be like, so what's your name? Where are you from? I don't know. You know,
what's
and
your
then
sign?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I don't even know that stuff. But I mean, but then sometimes you got rejected. So it really, like, oof. You'd go up to, like, the cute guy, or I would, and I'd be like, would you like to dance? And he'd be like, no. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'd walk away, and that one stung a little bit. And then my dad would be like, better get back out there and go, you know. And
get
so,
back in there.
Yeah, go in. And then I'd go ask another guy. He'd be like, yeah, sure. Okay. And then
I'm proud of you.
Oh, yeah. So I'm like, I don't know if maybe my outgoingness was because it's like you have to go out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
My sister would be like, I'm sitting here and I'm not dancing unless somebody asks me. And
that'd
I'm
be
like,
me.
Yeah.
So did you ever get stage fright, or were you always real comfortable when you first got on stage? You have to work through that?
No, I didn't have stage fright. You didn't either.
I definitely got nervous, but I feel the most safe and me on stage. Always. Yeah.
Yeah. Like my first talent show, my parents were like, oh God, she's going to throw up or pee her pants or something.
Okay. When you started touring, can you remember a bad show where you just came off going, I don't know if we can do this?
Oh yeah.
Tell me one.
Oh yeah. The Cincinnati one. Yes. We opened for Chase Rice.
Yes.
It was one of Toby Keith's bars. Maybe. Yeah.
I love this bar.
I love me some Toby Keith. Yeah. And so we played this show and I lost my voice.
Yeah.
And so I got off stage and was sobbing. And I was telling our bass player, I was like, no one in Cincinnati, Ohio is ever going to come to one of our shows. And mind you, I'm like 18 and I'm just beating myself up. Like, that's not horrible. And he's like, buddy, you're sick. Like,
happens. Everybody.
Yeah. And you've been touring. You've not been home in 8 months. And like, yeah, you're sick and you're just trying to, you know, make it through. And I'm like, but I ruined our career. And he's like, buddy, this is one of many. And so then like the next time I lost my voice, I was like crying a little, and he's like, what did I tell you last time? I'm like, everything's gonna be okay.
Okay, on the other side of that, one of the pinnacle shows that you've ever had.
Oh man.
Those magic moments. I know you've had at least one.
So many. Yeah.
I will say we did the Cry Pretty Tour 360 with Carrie Underwood back in 2019.
Yeah.
And we played Madison Square Garden, which was like my dream.
Yeah.
I was 17, like freshly moved to Nashville, and I've always made vision boards since I was
wild, by the way.
Like, I was 4 years old and I would just open a magazine and circle everything I wanted. And that was like my vision board back then. But I made like a fake ticket that said Madison Square Garden. I think it was like a Taylor Swift ticket, and I like put Maddie and Tay over it. And it said, set, start 7:30, sold out show at Madison Square Garden. And we played Madison Square Garden at like 7:20, 10 minutes off, to a sold out audience. And that was just one of those moments where it
gives
like
me shivers.
I just realized how far we had come. And I made my younger me so proud. And it was really cool.
It was really. It just goes to show, like, I mean, it'll take years and years and years. But, man, if you just don't let up, like, eventually something's going to happen, you know?
You just have to keep your head down sometimes. And even when you go through the sluggish spots where you're kind of wondering if you might need to rethink what you're doing, you just got to fight.
We quit every day. We quit this job every day. We're like, I quit.
Yeah,
I know.
But there's highs and lows in everything. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Yeah. And you just have to like, and I say that jokingly because we were in a writing session with the guys we wrote Die From a Broken Heart with. You know Jonathan Singleton and Derek Rattan, huh? Have you?
I don't think I've ever.
You would
with them.
Love. You got to write with them. You would love them. But we were having one of those days a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, sometimes I just don't know if we're meant to do this. And they're like, oh yeah, we quit like yesterday, but we're here. And so it's like it's that joke with the music business. Like, I'm gonna quit. It's too hard. And it's like, nope. Once you're in, it's your soul. Your spirit is just like so in love with music that you're like, I will put up with all the BS so I can do this. Like,
and you have to have that drive inside if you
pull it. Absolutely. I mean,
or you don't need to do this.
But there
you're
are
in
days.
This to see your name on the marquee, or you're in it for the money. You're in the wrong business.
Oh, no. Absolutely. We want to pay our bills, feed our babies, make music that we love, and leave a legacy for our babies that they'll be proud of.
Yes. So tell me about your songwriting approach. Do y'all write a lot still? I have a hard time writing on the road. I got a schedule.
Oh, we can't. Do it.
Do you keep a notepad with ideas? You keep it in your phone? Do you just store stuff and archive? I'm a schedule person. Are y'all?
Same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think because we're so creative that schedule, like God bless Lindsay for keeping the crazy trains on the tracks, because it helps my brain compartmentalize a little better.
Yeah.
But
we can't write on the road either. We've tried.
Too many distractions.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's like something to be said about, you know, when we're on the road, we want to like fully be in show mode, stage mode, creative mode. And then it's just like a different hat to wear when you're trying to write a song.
Too many hats wearing at once. You can't wear too many hats.
And that's when we learn to protect our energy, because you can't do both at the same time, for us at least.
But our writing process has been the same since we were 15. We typically, we know our strong suits. Like, T is the writer in the room that, one, she brings like incredible concepts and ideas, and like it's incredible to watch her. I feel like I get to learn from one of my favorite lyricists, but I'm more of a melody gal. So between the two of us, it's just always been like a really, really good balance. And we always write together. Very rarely, I think the only time that we didn't write together, she was on maternity leave and I was bored. So I was like, I'll go, you know, write some songs with some buddies. But we always write together, and we typically like we get a lot of ideas on the road because we're like living life.
Yeah.
And then we just bring them back to town and then, you know, write them. But
in our notes, just like ideas.
But I'm old school. I write in a notebook because the laptop and the phone's too distracting for me in a writing session. So I've got notebooks from like the last 10 years of like lyrics from all of our songs and stuff, which is pretty cool. But I just, I don't know, my brain, technology in general kind of wakes me out. I'm not a good millennial, I would say. I have to text Tay like, hey, how do you do this on Instagram? She's like, you old granny, this is how you do it.
I'll like send her videos, like tutorials.
Yeah, this is how you do a post. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. Hey,
if you held a gun to my head, I couldn't navigate Facebook to save my life. I don't get on those.
Oh things. No, mm-hmm. It's too much.
I haven't had Twitter in like 7 years.
Yeah,
I got wrapped up in TikTok pretty heavy for a while.
Oh yeah.
And I would find myself sitting there in front of the TV and 3 hours would go by and I've done absolutely nothing. I'd take it off my phone.
Oh, I know.
I can't do this anymore. It's just getting out of control.
Yeah.
Just watching 30-second clips of stupid, ignorant stuff.
Oh, my gosh. And sometimes it's like there's some helpful little, you know, I like to garden and I've got like a chicken and stuff. So I always watch little homestead videos and like.
Just one chicken.
Just so what happened, Tracy? We had a
subject,
lot.
Tell me about the chicken.
Let me tell you about the chicken.
Does the chicken have a name?
Her name is Una because she's the lone survivor of the chickens. So this chicken is bad, man. She is like a bad mama jamma.
She thinks she's a dog.
She does think she's a dog because, okay, so long story short, we had chickens, we moved houses, we brought the chickens, and in the woods, it is not a place for the chickens. And so the raccoons tore up our chickens. We got another batch of chickens, and Una was in that batch, and those got torn up. But she survived. And so she survived two massacres. And so she has earned her keep. And so now she's like a little wild chicken. Like Una will come home and she has hopped the fence. I don't know how, but she just like gets out and she just greets you whenever you come out of the car and then jumps in my car. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're disgusting. You're a chicken. Like, but she thinks she's a dog. And because we have two dogs that she runs around with, but like she's weird, man. But she deserves her life because she fought hard.
Yeah.
She fought, and I'm like, what if she killed all the chickens?
What a plot twist!
I mean, I don't know.
I won't put it past.
This doesn't sound like a good children's book.
The lone chicken,
the lonesome chicken.
But she responds when you talk to her. You're like, Una, get in the fence. And she's like,
chickens can be smart.
Yeah,
I had a pet
sassy
chicken when I was a little bit. Her name was Betsy.
My brother murdered my chicken.
He put the lawnmower on the wrong side of the board shed where Betsy stayed at night, and she got up on roosting on the handlebars on the lawnmower, and she fell and got her foot hung, and she hung upside down.
Oh my gosh,
and I was
so mad
at him for a long time. But she was a big old white laying hen, and Betsy followed me everywhere. She'd sit in my lap.
I had all kinds of critters
when I was a kid.
Oh really? Yeah, we did too.
We got six dogs and four cats in the house right now. A pair of Great Danes right on down to a Pekingese and a Shih Tzu.
That's amazing.
I love that.
We used to bring home animals all the time. My sister actually works in a vet office now, but I brought home like a tortoise one time I found in the road.
Lots of turtles.
Turtles all the time.
When the kids were little, after we got tired of the fish, I took the aquarium and made a terrarium.
Oh, yeah. How's
out
your
of
fish
so
going?
You got fish.
I'm a similar situation to the chickens. I've had two batches of fish now because my daughter, she's two, and she is like obsessed with all things living animals, fish, marine life. Her favorite movie is Finding Nemo.
Okay.
So we got her a little fish tank. And the first mistake was we got tropical fish. And
those are too hard.
They're moody little creatures.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, they're probably pissed off they're in a tank.
Right. And the water was too cold, so they like froze to death, which is sad.
And Layton goes, oh, fishy seeping.
They went night-night. That's what we told her. And then we got like seven goldfish. And then the next morning we woke up and there were only four. So they had eaten each other. And they were all belly up.
Well, that's why we went through that, and we turned the aquarium into a terrarium, and then
if I
would find a frog or a lizard or anything, I would always bring it in. We would
talk
about it, and we'd look it up,
yep.
And then when it was time to go, we'd just let it loose, and I'd go find something else. We just rotated things out.
Oh, my husband.
But it was a great
so
opportunity
mad
for the kids to play with it. No
yes
snakes, though. I'm not going to.
No, I don't like the snakes.
I have a theory about the snakes. The devil was a serpent in Genesis for a reason.
They are creepy.
Mr. No Shoulders is not welcome in my house.
He is, Mr. I do not. not like them things. Those, and we've got them bad in the woods. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, and my husband just like, let me do some man stuff, get my shotgun, pop out, and you know, and he just loves it. Get some man stuff. But I do always bring home critters still, and my husband Jonah gets so mad. I hid a turtle from him for about 2 days, and then he busted me. And then one time, I found the cutest. Oh, what was it? I can't remember. I just found something cute. I think it was baby, maybe a
bunny,
frog.
Baby bunny rabbits are fun. Yeah. Too, for just a little bit.
I had baby bunnies, and then he made me get rid of those, yeah. And then. It's just too much responsibility. Now that I have a kid, I'm like, oh my gosh, no more animals. Like, don't. But I was kind of Snow White when I first moved into the woods, and all the animals would try to come.
Birds
and
land on your face.
Oh, yeah. And I'd be, you know, and then they'd come. And yeah, but yeah, Jonah's like.
Yeah, but how old's your baby?
5 months.
Little boy, little girl?
Little boy named okay. Forrest. We live Forrest. In the forest, and his name's Forrest.
So him, did you have like dogs and stuff when you were little?
Oh,
children
yeah.
Children need a pet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got two dogs, and he loves the dogs. And he loves the chicken, too, but sometimes she'll try to peck him. I'm like, I will punt you across the entire property.
And your baby?
She's two, and we don't have animals, so that's
but she
we
comes
go.
Over a lot, yeah.
Yes, and when we go over to Auntie Maddie's house, that's what yeah. she calls her.
Yeah,
she's like in heaven.
Oh,
with the
yeah.
chicken and the trees.
Oh,
she loves
yeah,
it.
She's a nature girly.
Yeah.
So I know when my wife was pregnant with our first child, and we were on the road all the time, she could always tell when she would come out and sit on the side of the stage and watch the show. That if Skylar was restless in her belly, she would just calm down and stop and the music would start playing. After she was born, when she would come out, Skylar would be fine until the music started about three songs in. She would fall asleep every single time. When you were, could you tell those things when you were pregnant? My mama had six kids, and she swears that she could tell the personality of each one of us by the way we were when she was carrying
That's
us.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you kind of got
I didn't get
robbed.
To tour while I was pregnant, but you did.
Yeah, I did. I toured up until I was 37 weeks pregnant, yeah. which not gonna do that
and
again.
And they feel that music. Yes. They feel it all.
There was one time where I was playing, I think we were playing Shut Up and Fish, and I was so big, and he kicked my guitar, and my monitor engineer was like, what was that noise? I was like, it was my baby, kicking the guitar. But there were certain songs that he would like get crazy on. I'd be like, oh, buddy, calm down. I can't breathe. But it's funny. Like, there's definitely songs of ours that I'll sing that'll calm him down.
Yeah.
But he's like his personality. I knew he was going to be like goofy and wild because he was I just felt that when he was in my tummy. And he like for being from Houston, and like my husband likes some Houston rap, and so some of it's like just really like ratchet music, and he yeah. will calm down to like some of the most insane rap music, and then
probably
like
things that he heard when you were carrying
yeah, yeah. But I didn't yeah. listen to like that much rap, but like it's just funny. He's very much like me and yeah. Jonah and Layton. I mean, her story just, you know, she's a little fighter.
Yeah, that's, well, because we were supposed to go on our headlining tour in, what was it, January?
2022,
or April, March.
What's her middle
Can't
name?
Remember.
Does it start with
her
C?
Her name's Layton Grace.
I knew if it's starting with Layton C, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, that was really bad, wasn't it?
Layton C, oh my God.
Sorry.
Oh, wait, that's good. Good.
I was so slow to that, but I like it.
Sorry.
No, that's good.
I love it.
Layton G instead.
But she, yeah, we were supposed to tour, and I was so excited to like get on stage and rock a big belly and just see what that experience would feel like. But I ended up going into preterm labor when I was 24 weeks pregnant.
Oh, goodness. That's really early.
Very early. I was hardly halfway. And I went to the hospital and stayed in the hospital for 5 weeks, and I held her in, and I just kind of like chilled. I had to like
put you on bed rest and everything.
Bed rest. Yeah. That's right. Strict bed rest. No movements, no nothing. And then I went into labor at like 28 weeks, and then I was in labor for like 5 days, and then I had her on January 17th.
Did they start her on the development shots for respiratory and all that stuff early on?
They sure did. Yeah, I was on steroids like yeah. twice a day, all of it, the magnesium drip.
Make you mm-hmm.
Oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
Yeah. Oh, I was going cuckoo in the yeah. hospital. Cuckoo.
No, you weren't. You
yes,
handled
I
that
was.
Like a champ. I mean,
you.
She was so tough. I was just sobbing, trying not to be around her so she wouldn't see me crying, but
Yeah, she was born 2 pounds, 5 ounces.
How long did she have to stay in the hospital?
She was in the NICU for 53 days, so a little under 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was shorter than they thought. Yeah. But she's just like so...
She's so tough. Spicy. You wouldn't know she's a preemie. She's very tiny, but her intellect, she is just a chatty, genius. Sassy girl.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My gosh, she's so funny.
That's amazing what they can do nowadays.
Oh my gosh. We were on FaceTime when we were on the road because we had to leave our babies, which, oh my gosh, is also so hard. But so we were FaceTiming her and I was eating chips and she goes, Maddie eating chips? I'm like, yeah. And she, her nanny, she's like, yeah. Yayton want chips. She's like, Maddie eating chips. Yayton want chips. I'm like, okay. She just says some funny stuff, kids are man. Amazing. Oh my gosh, she's the
and
best.
And every stage, the terrible twos have their challenges.
That's what she's in right
so
now.
So fun.
They have their fun moments, but wait till they're teenagers. Oh. You're gonna cry to God, and you're gonna apologize to your parents for so many things.
Oh my, I'm scared, Tracy.
Oh, and yeah. You had teenage girls in that.
Oh, we've had moments of pure hell.
Oh, absolutely.
I love them.
I am gonna just. You know, jack you up, fool. Like,
I'm gonna knock you into next week.
Absolutely, because the attitude. Woof! Oh, I was a real a-hole from like 13 to 15, but then I was like, I'm not really into the a-hole thing, so I'll just be nice again. But
I don't know how my mother survived. She had 3 boys and 3 girls.
Oh,
and we all came with our own personalized quirks. Challenges.
Oh yeah, I know. My husband's 1 of 5, and it's a big family. It's so many different personalities, and like you got to find the balance. But it was just me and my sister, so I feel for you because you know my dad would whoop our ass if we gave attitude. So we were too scared to get in trouble.
Wait, so are you youngest, oldest, middle?
Right in the middle. I have an older brother and an older sister. They're 5 or 6 years on either side, and then 5 or 6 years between me and my 2 younger sisters. And then I have a younger brother that's 10 years younger. Yeah. It's like 16 years between my oldest brother and my younger brother. I never went to a school building with any of my siblings.
Whoa.
The oldest ones were gone. I was, by the time I got from junior high to high school, they were always out of the building.
That's crazy.
So I was like an only child in the middle of this big family.
That's how really my strange. Husband felt, because he's smack dab in the middle with 2 older, 2 younger, and he felt that way, and he was like, it was kind of nice, because I wasn't, you know, having to take care of all of them, because the little ones didn't come along till a little later, but middle child is a thing. It makes sense because the middle child, I feel like you have like this natural balanced, like, I don't know, your energy just seems so balanced, which would make sense.
Yeah, I was a big wallflower. I mean, not a wallflower. I was a big social butterfly. Mm-hmm. I knew I had friends in every little clique in the school. I was quite fine being by myself. I was okay being in my room playing my guitar and writing songs. I didn't have to have, I could go outside with a pack of firecrackers and some Green Army men and spend hours blowing up shit.
But
nothing really stressed me out. I was a pretty happy kid.
That's great.
So let's go back to let's get back on the road and talk about music. What, as y'all started traveling out there, what have been some of the obstacles as you transition into babies and all that stuff? I mean, what's your daily routine like? I mean, those are some challenges as female artists and mothers that you really have to overcome.
Absolutely.
I mean, are you finding, do you take a nanny with you on the road? I mean, do you schedule activities, look at zoos, different things that you can get to during the day?
Yeah. I'm the rookie, so you can speak more.
I was sort of the guinea pig. The thing was, Tracy, Maddie was supposed to get pregnant before me. Because she's the baby whisperer, and I was like, I don't even know if I want kids. And then I got pregnant. We made a little love baby.
Well, there you go. Well,
I don't want to say accident.
They were having fun.
She's a little love baby. But the first, we went on our headlining tour like 4 months after she was born. So technically with her adjusted age, she was only 2 months old.
Yeah.
And she went on the road and my husband was the tour daddy, as we said.
That's what my husband's going to be this year, tour daddy. Yeah.
And it was challenging. It took me a really long time to accept that we would need outside help, childcare, for example. Because my husband works full time as well. He's a songwriter and a producer in town. And it was just like, it was so much weight on both of us. And like, we both have full-time schedules. But I will say the hardest part for me was this career was my baby since I was, 14. I mean, really my whole life, all I've cared about is music. And it was like the weirdest transition to some nights I would just go on stage and have to accept that I could only give 30% because the other 70 was with my daughter. And it was just a really hard thing to
accept. 30% is my like 120. So let's not.
But you know, you just,
she's awesome.
You just get to a point where you're like, okay, something's got to give from one of these aspects, and it's not going to be my family. So I just have to accept that maybe this is just that's a season of life.
But there's so many demands on your time too.
Yes,
it's not a bad thing to get help. But as far as just being an absentee parent, that's a whole different thing.
Yes,
but having somebody that your child gets comfortable with. I mean, we had to go through that process too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm in the struggle right now of like wanting to find help because I was a nanny kid. Like we had a nanny and we did way more with her than our parents, I would say. And like, God bless them. They're both working their butts off full time and stuff. But I just don't, you know, it's a different balance with her and her nanny where like she is a extension of
and family assistant.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
A lot more than
watch, so it's it's not like, you know, Layton's when she's crying, she's not running to tea. You know, it's a very different situation than what it was for me. So I kind of have this little thing where it's just a whole thing I got to work through, but I'm just over here putting so much pressure, like I have to do it all by myself, and it's obviously not sustainable. So I'm still in the struggle of trying to figure out how to not do it all myself, and I'll get there. And
my wife's the same way.
It took T what 8 months to hire a nanny, and like we'll probably get there, but I'm she knows exactly how I'm feeling right now.
You should only have to kill two or three of them to find the right one.
I know.
No. You ain't wrong.
They lucked
out. You hurt
my
baby, I'm gonna hurt you.
Oh man,
it's hard to trust somebody with your heart.
Oh yeah, they lucked out. The first nanny they got, she is an angel. Like her gift from God is being with kids. Like,
and you have to find a really good nurturer.
Oh, yeah. That's
what it's about.
Sometimes we have to tell her, Liv, go take care of yourself. You've been taking care of this baby all day. Like, go do something for yourself. And she's like, what?
Yeah.
I'm dying to ask this question.
Come on.
I know y'all love each other, and you answer each other's questions and all that. What's the biggest disagreement you ever had?
Oh, man. Biggest disagreement?
You ever had a knockdown dragout?
We've never had a
knockdown dragout.
But both of us are not, confrontational. Like,
she's a Cancer, I'm a Virgo. So
we are
very
sensitive,
people pleaser energy.
Yes. Yeah. So, but if there's ever like, if it's like, you hurt my feelings, like we just sit and I'm like, that really hurt my feelings. She's like, I understand. You know, it's
and then
very,
we end up crying together.
Yeah, and it's like,
that's what we do.
I know.
So he and I, we're both Aquarius. Yes. Aquarius.
Aquarians.
Aquarians.
Aquariums.
Yeah. So what does that
that's better
us?
Than equestrian.
So if those are sensitive, what is an Aquarius?
I don't know
much
stuff.
About Aquarius.
We're the water bearers.
I will say.
Yeah. I think y'all are the first zodiac. Y'all are like the strongest ones or something like that, right? It's something like
middle of January through middle of February, like that's right.
But yeah, we've definitely had like hard moments in our friendship and like have to have hard conversations and all that. But I think through and through, like we never let the other not feel heard.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm trying to think. Like the only main disagreements that we get into is like if there's a show offer and I'm like, well, I was supposed to be with my family on vacation.
Uh-huh.
And Maddie's like, but I really want to play this show. And I'm like, but I don't. Those are just real disagreements that we have.
Which is
but
so
we
normal.
Always meet in the middle.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what's your song process as you go through and you write all these things, getting that whittled down to those 10 or 12?
Oh,
is
God.
There's some serious discussion, I'm sure.
We had one on The Way It Feels where she really wanted one song and I wanted another one, and she was right. And I'm glad that we didn't cut the one that I really wanted to cut.
I honestly don't even remember that.
It was the How's the Weather one.
Oh, right.
It was like really spicy. Yeah. It was too spicy for that record.
Yeah, yeah.
We're getting spicy now, but that record, it wasn't meant to be spicy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one she picked, like we still have in our set and everything. So, but it's never like, we both do not tolerate disrespect at all. And I think like, from top down, like the way we, you know, it's kind of like a marriage where it's like how the parents treat each other is how the kids are going to treat each other. And if it's like dysfunctional and like, then the kids are not going to get along. And so it's like for us, we kind of like, you know, we make sure we're good and like we've communicated.
Yeah.
And then everyone around us isn't like walking on eggshells, because we've heard horror stories of duos like fighting and I'm just like, oh, more times no.
that well, way than not.
I know. And that's what, I mean, everyone asks that in interviews. They're like, come on now. Like, y'all really don't
fight. Yeah.
This isn't real, right? And we're like, no, it actually is. Like, anyone who's around
so
us.
So, y'all haven't gone so far as to betroth your children to each other yet, have you?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
they are besties.
Yeah, they are bestie.
What if they fall in love, you know?
Honestly, that would be so sweet. Honestly, if she was my in-law, I would be like, this is pretty great.
Like, we could plan a wedding together.
Yeah, because I wouldn't do anything. Tay would do all of it.
It would be so fun.
I would just sit there and pour the mimosas while she does all the stuff.
Speaking of, do we need more?
I'm good. No, I'm good. I'll totally take more.
I'll take
get
more.
It, girl.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. I'm just such a lightweight now. Like,
there's still some in that one.
God. I was in a foul mood yesterday. Just a horrible mood.
Tell me all about it.
Oh, no. It was just, you know, the seasons of life when God's cooking up good stuff and the devil's like, jab, jab, jab. And you're like, God, yeah. So I was just having one of those days. The baby's sick, like, just fussy, you know, the whole thing. And I was like, I'm about to go make me a chili cheese dog. And
Sometimes you need that.
It made me feel a little bit better for him. I ate like a bunch of junk yesterday.
That was amazing.
I felt terrible, but I felt good in my soul. And that matters. Okay, but I don't.
Comfort food.
Yeah.
What is your comfort food? I'll share mine with you if you share
yours
with me.
You go first because I have so many.
Okay, when I went to college for a couple of years and I was
working. We didn't even try, so good on you.
But I had no money. I was dirt poor and everything. So I would go to the store and I would buy a bag of potatoes. And I would buy the cheapest weenies that I could buy using the red dye, and then you could get like cheap green English peas or something.
Yeah.
And I would boil the weenies because I'd boil all the dye out of them.
Oh yeah.
And then I would make French fries, and then I would eat these like 5 cans for a dollar, whatever they were back then.
Wow.
So I would eat boiled weenies and French fries and English peas, and still sometimes when I come home, that's all I want.
Man.
I still eat that to this day. Of course, I have turkey weenies now and Lesser peas.
Yeah.
You know, I have the higher quality of stuff nowadays. But that's just the weirdest stuff I've ever heard anybody. That's just a weird thing.
That is a weird combo, but
the
I like
kids
it.
Call it girl dinner these girl days, dinner. Which basically it's like a smorgasbord of like random stuff that like seems disgusting, but it's comforting. So I mean, I have a lot, but a classic is butter noodles for me.
Okay, I like
because you could get like a thing of pasta for, you know, 50 cents at Kroger.
Totally.
I mean, 10 years ago you could, but you'd go get some pasta. I mean, ramen noodles is still so comforting. Like, it just keeps you humble. You know, it's like, hey, you were broke. Don't get your britches
all
big.
But sometimes,
you know,
going back eating those things that you ate when you were poor,
it reminds you.
Comfort back to me. It's
same. Yeah, because I was happy when I was broke. And I'm still happy. Yeah. It's like the money is just a little bit, you know.
Have y'all ever had pickled okra?
Oh, yes.
Right out of the jar.
Yes. Then take a little sip of the juice. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That, I'm like, my mouth is watering.
So do you like okra in your gumbo?
I love okra.
I love okra in my gumbo.
I love it so much.
There's people down in South Louisiana that, I mean, some people don't put okra.
That's
do you like beans in your chili?
I love beans in my chili too.
I think in Texas you're not really supposed to.
That's
but
like
we,
no go.
We do be breaking that rule.
I like beans.
It's a nice little
hearty.
But in Texas, it's like a whole discrepancy. Like there's
people will argue with you about this in Texas.
Yeah.
You don't put beans in chili.
What do they put in it? Corn?
No, they don't put anything. It's just meat and sauce.
Yeah.
Oh no,
it's like that, a thin tomato sauce.
Yeah, I don't like that. I think it needs to be zhuzhed up. It needs to be kind of fancy.
I like onions and everything in it.
I like it. My breath better stank after I eat chili. Okay.
Put some Fritos on that.
Oh, some Fritos.
What's your comfort food?
Well, pickled okra. That's
all.
Then I like, this is really bad, but I like tostada pizza rolls.
Oh, the ones that burn the crap out of your mouth.
Totinos.
I don't even set the timer on those bad boys. I just wait till they pop and then they start to like come out. I'm like, oh, they're done.
I dip mine in ketchup, which makes no sense.
Oh,
no, that sounds good.
Man, I have so much comfort food. I mean, chocolate chip cookies, there's not much that can't fit. I mean, yesterday I was in such a bad mood. My husband brought chocolate chip cookies and I was still grumpy. And he's like, ooh, you really going through it, because most of the time this is the trick.
We were just in Savannah, Georgia on Saturday night with Riley, and I don't know if you've ever spent any time there. I've been there many times, but we went downtown and had sushi that day. There are candy stores everywhere. They had gelato and all of them. They make these homemade turtles. I love turtles as a candy with the chocolate and the pecans. But they had so much candy, it was ridiculous. Little chocolate truffles. Oh, just, I mean, you walk in there, it's like I don't need to eat all this.
So you have a sweet tooth?
Just a little bit. My favorite's apple stuff. I love apple tarts and turnovers and apple pies.
He would
pies.
Love Jonas love, apple crumble. Yes. My husband is like apples. Basically like a home chef slash, I mean, I call him the Jonah of all trades because he's like a contractor. He's a chef. He can bake his little tail off. Like, he just does everything. He gardens, like all this kind of stuff. So, but he makes this apple crumble that I'm going to have to make for you.
And I
it's
love
like,
it.
Die for.
Oh my, it's
but you
got to
have
favorite.
The Tillamook vanilla
ice cream.
Bean
ice cream. You got to have it. The right ice cream with it. Yeah. And her husband, I'm like, I still need to make him his dang apple crumble because.
Tillamook, is that's a brand, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have you ever had pistachio ice cream?
No.
I haven't.
But I think
know,
I would like that.
I think I would too.
It's unbelievable how good it is. You wouldn't think it would be, but it's amazing.
Yeah, ice cream is another comfort food. Like if I get
Bluebell,
a little,
you know, Bluebell makes a Dr. Pepper ice cream now.
What?
And Dr. Pepper's
because
my jam.
Waterburger, Dr. Pepper's
my. Dr. Pepper floats or Dr.
But
Pepper's,
you know what? My sister-in-law used Dr. to Pepper work chips, for Waterburger, like corporate, and did all the merch and stuff. And she said that they switched the Dr. Pepper shake for a banana something. I'm like, nobody needs more bananas. We need more Dr. Pepper. And she said she went to the meeting and she fought for that Dr. Pepper shake, and they said no.
What?
Because, I don't know, something with the syrup was too expensive. I'm like, what? But you are robbing people of joy.
That is so sad.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. And I asked her in three meetings. I was like, tell them.
She's
tell
doing
them.
Lord's work.
And I was posting. I was, yeah, and they still said no. Mm. But I had a question. I do love me some Dr. Pepper. But yeah, I had a question for you. No, it's nothing bad. But so you have been, how long have you been in this business?
I got my record deal. I moved to Nashville in 1990.
Okay.
September of 90. I got my deal in 91.
Wow,
I was
that's
22.
Fast.
Yeah, 7 months from the time I rolled into town. I had the first time I'd ever been here.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty fast trip.
That's amazing.
And then my first single came out in August of 91. And Sticks and Stones was my first number one record.
Wow.
First one out of the box.
Oh my gosh.
Number one in January of 92.
So you have seen, and, you know, for us, we're like, oh, Tracy Lawrence, freaking, you know, the biggest, you know, one of the biggest country stars in our, you know, and favorite artists ever. Mm-hmm. But in your mind, there's probably been times when you were like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here, or doubting if this was the career, or maybe not. But my question for you would be like, how did you like push through those times of like doubt, or like, you know, I don't know if you've had like slumps, because in my mind, I'm like, hit song, hit song, hit song. But, you know, from the outside looking in, that's, you know, what we see. But like for you, were there moments? And if there were, how did you like shake it off and just keep going?
You know, a bad divorce, there have been things along
the way. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There have been bad things along the way that just knock the wind out of your sails, that make everybody back off from you, and the industry kind of pulls back, and labels kind of shelve you for a little while. I've seen the highs and lows of it all.
Ow, that has to hurt.
But you know what? I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier about always continuing to remember what it is and why you do this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And remaining passionate about it. And sometimes you just got to put your head down and just keep going.
Yes. Yes.
Because you don't have anything else. You just put your head down and keep going. Know at some point you're going to pop out on the other side.
Wow.
It might be 2 years. It might be five. You just don't know. You just keep going.
That perseverance. Wow.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Your resilience and your perseverance is so impressive to me.
Like, and it, you know, and you, I mean, you can say the same things about a lot of people that have come through this business.
Absolutely.
From health issues or whatever is going on, or you know, financial trouble. I mean, a lot of people go through financial problems too. I mean, it's just we deal with the same things that people don't realize, that everybody in this business is struggling with a lot of the same things. Our life's just out there for everybody to see.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. More money, more problems, man. No, I'm just kidding. But,
so
but kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it does add another dimension. And
it brings
a lot more problems along. And having employees and learning to deal with all that stuff, that's a huge learning curve for a young person.
Being a boss, and like, I'm sure for you too, or I just people in general, but for me, sometimes it's hard. Like when you're in boss artist mode, and then you come home and you're in parent mode, and it's a little gentler of a hat that you're wearing at home than you are. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I got my boss pants on, we need to switch it and put on like the more gentle, like, you know, calm, like everything's good hat.
Well, I know I went through several years. I self-managed myself from like 95 all the way up to 2014.
Oh my
I mean
gosh.
I had a staff of people. I've had offices downtown. I was running publishing companies, independent labels, the whole thing, and still doing 100 shows a year.
Holy
my wife
crap.
Set me down. I would come home. My wife got on me one day. She said, I don't work for you. And you've got to stop bringing this home. This has got to stop because there's got to be a balance here. She said, I know you're under a lot of pressure. You're wearing a lot of hats, but you got to change when you come home. Don't bring that shit home.
Yeah. No. Go leave it in the car.
It's a hard thing to find that balance. It's not easy.
I try to be intentional. Like when I get home, like even today, when I get home, I will like check my phone, anything I need to respond to or emails or calls, like try to do that on the way home. So then when my car gets in that driveway, I leave it all in the car right
there.
Take
a minute.
And I go.
Do you have a little switch that you flip in your brain to take a minute?
Yeah.
Before you get out of the car?
Yeah. And I just like take a little breath and then like, I don't know, like right when I walk into the house, I start feeling like, okay, I'm back to like my peaceful, like, you know, place of rest.
As soon as you see your chicken.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. When she comes and greets me and then that cute baby and I'm just like, okay, I'm good. I'm fine.
The switch is flipped.
The chicken throws a switch.
But I think that some people get maybe a little spinny if you don't have that skill to switch. You know what I'm saying? Like even like
And it's a learned skill. It's not
a choice. Yeah. Absolutely. It does not come naturally at all. Because naturally you want to come home and dump all your stresses on your partner, but your partner's like, wait, I've been waiting for you to get home and I don't want the leftovers. I want you, you know? Yeah. And it's like, how do you have enough to give to all these things? And it's back, you know, T's so good at protecting her energy. So when she goes home, she's like, I still have energy left in the tank.
It is one of my spiritual gifts, compartmentalizing. It always has been. And it was learned probably the hard way on radio tour. I remember I was like, okay, they're expecting me to show up bubbly and outgoing and talkative. And that just is not me. I mean, I love to be friendly, but I'm just a very like reserved person naturally. Mm-hmm. I'm a true introvert. Like that's just how I am. I recharge on my own. And I remember like radio tour, there is no alone time.
Yeah.
And I just didn't protect my peace. And I ended up on antidepressants at 18 because I was just like, I can't handle this.
Yeah.
And I learned the hard way, like, okay, I can be who I am. I don't have to be anything I'm not for this industry. And if they don't like me, that's cool.
Too
but
bad,
if they do, that's great. Maddie likes me. That's pretty much all I need. And then when I'm home, I can just check out and be me. And my husband and I have a pretty firm boundary of like we don't talk about work because we both are in the industry, which can be a little squirrely.
He's like writes basically half of our records with us and produces for
we are
us.
Great. Co-workers and partners and life
partners.
But at
home, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, we'll play each other music, and that's fun. And we'll talk about work, obviously, if there's something on my heart or his. But other than that, we're just like...
It sounds like y'all have really healthy boundaries. Do you find writing songs to be almost like, I've found it to be at times like if you have a co-write with one or two people, like it's going to a shrink or something where you actually are able to purge a lot of things out. I would struggle if I was writing with my wife a lot. I wouldn't feel like I would be able to share a lot of those things because you get in a room with a couple of people that you trust.
Yeah.
And sometimes you talk about things to get to a hook line or get to a thought that come from a deep place. It's almost like you're purging some things. I always feel like when I'm in writing mode and I'm doing that a lot, I'm getting a lot of that stuff out of me that needs to go somewhere.
Yes. And naturally, like you're not forcing it. It's just coming out.
It's just coming out. And I always, when you flesh a song out in 3.5-4 hours or whatever long it takes and you've got it right where you want it and you walk away, I always feel this great sense of pride.
Oh my gosh.
It's just so liberating to me.
There was a song on our last record, Through the Madness, I think it was on volume 2, called These Tears.
Mm-hmm. And perfect example.
I did therapy for like about 2 years for like a specific life event thing that I needed, or traumatic event that I needed to kind of untangle and heal and get to the root of that was causing all kinds of panic and whatever. And so I did a bunch of this work internally and I never thought I would like write a song about, and you know, I'm not being like, this is what happened, but just the feeling of the hook of the song is these tears should have been cried long ago. And it was all this stuff I was holding on to that needed, you know, to be left in the past. And man, in the writing session, I was getting teary. But I was able to like write through the like that like achy feeling in your stomach and that just where you're like croak in your throat and you're just like, I'm gonna lose it. And I like kept it cool. But then when we went to go cut it, I was sobbing. And we cut live vocals on that song. Like we did not touch them, we didn't tune them, we just left them as it was. And that's definitely one of my most like proud moments.
Did you struggle the first time you performed it live?
we've never performed it live.
Those things, I think that's gonna.
I'm hoping that doesn't happen because that might be hard. I do feel like I'm in a better place about all that. It was still real fresh at the time, but man, it was just this beautiful like moment that I feel like God gave me of like, hey, this is, we're gonna heal this, and then we're gonna, you know, next chapter. Like we're gonna leave that where it's
you
at.
You know, and as a songwriter too, I had to learn over the years that everything doesn't have to be exactly like what the memory or the situation was that you lived through.
Yes.
You can abstract. You can color it up. I mean, it's your
prerogative. You can protect yourself.
You don't have to expose anybody else or yourself. You can still get the message across and get the colors and the textures and the smells and the flavors and all the things that you need in there to make it a very special piece without giving it away. Yes. And sometimes that makes it more special.
Because oversharing is definitely a thing. And I think...
But the public, whatever you put out there, that's what they believe is real.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they don't know any different.
Yeah. And it was nice because, like, I mean, T obviously knows all of my everything. And so she was very, like, protective of me in that moment. And I was very protective of her when we were writing Die From a Broken Heart because she was kind of in the same boat, like, 2 weeks prior, she had just ended like a serious 3-year relationship and it was gnarly and I would still love to punch the guy, but I'm a Christian, so I can't. But, you know, maybe I'll leave the faith for a day so I can get my knuckle sandwich in and then I'll...
Say 10 Hail Marys and call you in the morning.
The Lord forgives, so... But anyways, but that day, you know, our co-writer was like, hey, what about this, you know, hook? And I was like, God, this is so powerful, but I'm just looking at T like, is this okay? And she had to take a lot of bathroom breaks and, you know, try to, you know, like wipe the tears. But if we wrote it in such a raw moment in life and never thought it would see the light of day, and then, you know, it's just cool, like in our story the past, you know, almost 15 years of being in a duo, God has taken the ugliest, hardest, gnarliest situations and turn them into the most beautiful parts of our story. And always. So that's something that, like, I just choose to have faith because he's done that so many times where I'm like, okay, surely if he's done that this many times, he ain't gonna stop doing it. You know, if I just choose to, like, believe that even through the bad, you know, yeah, it's, he's still good.
So, yeah, have y'all done any European stuff yet?
Yes.
Early on in our career, we haven't been back to the UK in, like, oh my gosh,
so long,
too long.
Like, but since 2018,
that market's exploded over there.
Yeah,
and I haven't been back in quite a while. We've done Australia, we've done quite a few things over in Europe over the years, but I really want to go over there and do some extensive stuff. Do y'all have plans to go back soon?
We want to. We did Australia like really early on in our career, and that was like
Australia's
magical.
Awesome. Yes.
Oh my gosh, it was so cool. And then we did a couple headlining tours out in the UK.
Yeah.
The most recent, I think, was like 2017 or 18. So we are definitely due for a UK trip. It's magical out there because they love songwriting. Like, it's different. The crowds out there are different than here because they're a little more like attentive to lyric, I feel like. Like, they are listening to the lyrics that you're singing out there, which as songwriters just fills my cup, you know?
Yeah. Well, and all those places like Switzerland is very different. We've gone over and played these specialty parties. They have a different perspective of what they call country and Western.
Yep.
We played this big tent party over there in Switzerland.
We did that too.
And they showed up in chaps and plastic pop guns and little toy cowboy hats. And
it was
it's like
kind of weird.
Holy moly! Yeah, it's a little. It take you back a little bit.
Oh,
it's like
because
it's like a Halloween party for them.
I know.
It really is.
We're like, this ain't no Halloween. This is a Tuesday at my house.
I couldn't get over the exits called Osfarts.
Oh my God.
That's all you got out of that.
Well, I was like, there's a
Well, they do exit, you know.
Somebody named a town Osfart, and I was like, God, how big is this town? But it's like, oh, those are exits. Oh, okay.
It's the giantest fart you've ever seen in your life.
How many dates are y'all going to do this year? Do you know?
I think we're going to try to get to like
70?
60, 70, something like that. We've learned that, especially with having kids. Like, because we've done the like 200 dates and all that stuff in the beginning, and it's just not sustainable. Like,
and we're still like at the point of our career, just trying to find ways to I mean, make it a financially sustainable career.
Yeah. Which, hence, changing management was a huge thing for us. We already do. Like, first meeting.
Talk about her. There she is.
I know. First meeting, we were like, I'm in love. Can we hire them now? No, you can't do it.
We literally didn't want to have any other meetings. But
we had to. So we were like, we got to do our due diligence.
It's a great team over there.
Oh, it's so great.
I've enjoyed being with them so much. It changed my life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Same. And but I think, like, for touring, you know, from the outside looking in, it looks like, oh, they're rich. And like, we don't really make money from touring right now in our career and haven't for a while. And so it's more of like investing in ourselves to then years to come. We are, like, touring is super profitable for us, but we're in this weird in between where it's like, we're not a, you know, first of third act, and we could be a direct support for some, but, like, we also can sell out a couple places. Like, it's just like, we don't really belong.
How much social media do you do? Are you posting all the time? I mean, that's a world that I'm just not comfortable in. I mean, I do this and we spread it around, but I don't post things.
Same. Yeah, I think that was like a really unnatural thing for us
even
to do.
Because y'all kind of grew up with it more than I did.
We did,
but
in
Instagram
way.
Came out when we were in high school. So we're not like these kids that, like, you know, we had, you know, like the Nokia phones. Like, we saw, like, when the cell phones came out. Like, we're this weird generation where we've seen the giant computers go to, you know, the phone and, you know, just stuff like that. Yeah. And it's so weird.
And it's, like, we're, I mean, every day we're like, okay, we signed up to be artists, not
content creators
or content creators.
Because that's a whole
job. There's so much to it now, though, and a lot of labels won't even look at a new actor if they don't have a million followers.
Because they don't have to do any of the work.
And that's
just the dang truth.
I mean, you release a song, and I know every artist feels this right now. You release a song, and it's, you wait for it to go viral on TikTok, and then you can put it out as a single, and that's just like, it hasn't happened for us. Yeah. So we're just like,
which is real funny, because the label, for us at least, they really want us to push our music on TikTok and, like, hey, get this song to go viral. And we're like, okay, we're going to try and do the videos. But Universal and TikTok are in this, like, standoff now where none of our music is on TikTok. So I'm like, hold up. So y'all having some issues, but you want me to blow up the music on this platform. But y'all, like, what is happening? So it's just a whole mess, and don't eat, like,
we're just keeping our head down, like you said. Like, we're just,
but this is,
I was on Universal for about that long, and it was an awful experience.
Yeah, I think it's like hit or miss for some people. We've been really blessed while we've been there. Like, we've had some big champions, and I think if it weren't for those big champions that really fight for us, it would be a different experience. But, you know, everyone's so different, because, like, some people, we came from Big Machine and we had a handful of people that we loved there, but we did not belong in that environment. The way that they run things there is not how we
And I know some of that because I was on DreamWorks, and Scott was the head of promotions on DreamWorks.
Yeah.
And so that, it was great while we were doing that, but then DreamWorks merged back into Universal.
Yeah.
And there was a whole lot of shuffle there. It got pretty ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, I left one meeting going, call the lawyers, I'm getting off this life.
Oh,
it was
good for you.
It was so
for
bad.
You.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just different strokes for different folks, but we just did not belong there long term. And, you know, who knows? Like, you know, we love our team at Universal, but, you know, we've been in this business. You can, you know, it can
really
change real fast.
It can change real fast, but there's such a balance between having to have a presence on social media, because it does affect your everything that you do.
And it's such a bummer, because it's just a whole other job.
It's just,
you know,
all about staying relevant. And it's like,
and that messes with your head a little bit too.
And I don't know. It's got to be awful. I know my kids struggle with it growing up in this day and age, where you're so worried about how many likes you're getting or how many followers you're sustaining and making sure you post enough. It causes a lot of mental health problems.
Yeah,
it
does. But
it really,
like,
does.
You said, it's not real. Like, just like the music business, social media is not real. Nothing is real about it. And so it's like, the way that I've been able to kind of have peace about it is, like, unfortunately, like, this sounds so icky, but, like, we are the product that we are selling. And in order to sell this product, I need to engage this platform or partner. And so I've been trying to make it a little more, like, business feeling.
Your can of peas, and you just got to market your brand.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just, like, that's what we're doing. And so, I mean, and there is time on social media where I like to, where we share, like, about being moms or, like, you know, just trying to make other, young women feel good about themselves or, you know, just post positive things.
And that's got to be frustrating, the climate out there right now where everything is so upside down in society and men are being demasculated and women are being made to feel guilty about being feminine and all of
things. Oh my gosh,
it's so upside down.
It doesn't matter what you share, there will be
it's
backlash.
Wrong to somebody.
Yeah. And somebody's going to get their feelings hurt about it. That's why I don't even look at all that.
I know. So it's interesting because, I mean, we came out with Girl in a Country Song, which is like this feminist anthem.
Very controversial.
Yes. But I still love to cook for my husband. I still love to clean my house. I still love to do those, I guess, domestic woman things. And it's not something that I'm ashamed of, but society right now is like, oh, you can't be a strong feminist and do that.
Why not?
I don't know. I don't understand.
None of it makes sense.
No. I think it's all
almost
beautiful.
It's almost to the point that it doesn't matter what you do.
Exactly.
Can't please
everybody. So just do whatever the hell you want because everyone's going
to
be mad.
They're marketing tools.
Right.
They're ways to reach an audience out there and hopefully you can continue to grow that base and find more people that are like you that kind of dig who you are without changing who you are.
And that's one thing that we've just like, we refuse to diminish our artistic integrity and like our integrity as humans. Like there's definitely been times where it's like, oh, you know, like in the past we've been told like, oh, y'all are boring. Like you're not controversial enough. Like, you know, you're not,
you're not dressing skimpy enough.
Yes,
you're not doing this.
Exactly.
Doing
and it's like, well, if that's what I have to do to get it, I don't want it.
Yeah.
If I have to change who I am, if we have to change who we've been this whole time to get it, then we don't want it.
I do think that's what's beautiful about like this podcast and the new age of technology and social media. Like there's definitely ways that we've tried to find ways to be more authentic to us, but also like staying in the social world.
Absolutely.
You know, like podcasts, we definitely want to eventually start one, show our personalities more.
Yeah.
But it's been very healthy for me because I'm not one of these people that post stuff all the time. And I needed this.
Exactly.
I'll share one more thing with you. We'll start winding down. My wife and I watched this new Johnny Cash movie last night.
Ooh.
And it was about his life. And there's so much. Marty Stewart narrated it. Have y'all seen this thing?
Is it on Showtime?
Or HBO or something. Okay. It was on like DirecTV at the house.
Yeah.
But it went through his whole journey about how when he had his meltdown, he grew up very, very spiritual, grew in a very Christian home. And he had a place up in Chattanooga and he had a cave on his property called Nickajack Cave. And he decided that he was done. He was been burnt out on pills and all this stuff. And he took a flashlight and he walked into Nickajack Cave and he went as far as he could. The battery went dead on it and he laid down and waited to die. And when he woke up, he crawled out and he made peace with God and he went through this whole process. And then it went through his journey about how as he was detoxing and everything, how June was there and went through the whole process with him. And then he became friends with Billy Graham and just his whole spiritual journey through all this stuff,
chills.
How the labels dropped him because he started doing Billy Graham, the revivals and things. And he had so many people that turned on him and just how difficult it was. And he just had so much conviction in his faith after he went through all that, that he didn't care what the label said. I mean, he got dropped from Columbia over his faith and what he was doing.
Dumbasses they are. You dropped Johnny Cash?
They
dropped
Johnny Cash. Yeah. And then he went from being one of the most respected, best played artists. They loved him when he was a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
They canceled his show because of all of it. So so you don't realize that all the things that you struggle with, that's why I like watching these things. Everybody's got a story. Everybody's got something to share.
Yes.
And this is not a bed of roses that any of us are walking through.
Absolutely.
But to see what he went through and how long he lived and to see the class that he had there at the end and just some of the last music that he made was pretty freaking powerful.
I mean, and not
so it's the
times.
Journey.
Yeah.
It's the journey. Yes. We're not running a race here. This is a slow process.
Great.
And there's so much along the way that you can do and achieve and that you can inspire somebody with.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you could accomplish in the journey if you just don't lose sight of what it is you're about as a human being.
And you just take the ride.
The redemption of an American
icon. Is that the one, Tracy?
Okay, cool.
Just want to make sure
that's it right there.
I can't wait to watch it.
I want
to
watch
that. Absolutely amazing.
Not to be a weirdo, but I feel like find out who your friends are. Like that song embodies.
Yeah.
That was very redemptive for me too.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you had those moments where you know, oh, I'm on top of the world and everyone loves me. And then but what did my papa used to say? He'd say, it's a short walk from the mansion to the shit house. And it's true. Like, there's times in life when you are up in the clouds, and then there's times in you find out who really has your back, and
you really do.
And we are so grateful that we have each other, but also like the champions that we do have like around us, because man, this business, I understand why people get like hooked on drugs or alcoholics.
Around us, and we've been through our ups and downs. Yep. With all of us, just I've had my struggles.
Absolutely, and we all have. Yeah. We all have. Like, we have all had our moments. And
but you know, I've met some amazing people. You know, I've had a chance to go to the White House a couple of times.
And met athletes. We did that last year.
What's some of the coolest people that you've met along your journey so far?
We met Oprah.
Gosh, that was
so cool.
I talked to Dolly, and she was like, oh, I love you girls. And I was like, don't say that. I'm going to die. Like, I'm just freaking out. You're definitely up there on the list, because I grew up just like worshiping all of your records and all of your songwriting. Man, there's a lot.
George Strait.
Oh, I about passed out. I mean, I'm from Texas,
I still get overwhelmed around Strait. Because he was my guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then Alan Jackson, I freaked out. I think the number one freak out for me was Leanne Womack, because she is
she's an angel.
Hero. Like, I wanted to be her. Like, 5 years old, watching I Hope You Dance music video over and over. And, you know, back when you had to wait and, like, watch it when it came on CMT or GAC or whatever. And I would just wait until it was on the countdown. And when we met her, I was freaking out.
What a great voice.
Oh,
she has
man.
Had some amazing records over the years.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. We've definitely met, like, some really cool, like, big, giant, famous people. But the most impactful ones, the ones we've, you know, mentioned. The White House was so crazy, man. I had some conspiracies about that place.
Did you get to go on like a tour and all the different
No,
things?
I went in with some Secret Service people that we know. Okay. So I didn't get to go up to the residential part of it, but we went around through the West Wing and through all that stuff. And it was actually when Clinton was in the White House, and I got to go down to the bowling alley, and there's a bowling alley in the basement.
Whoa.
I sniffed Chelsea's shoes. Whoa.
Oh my God.
It wasn't too bad.
We met the Bidens, and it was wild.
Yeah.
And then this was weird. We did the White House thing in December for the National Tree Lighting. Joe Walsh is like one of our best friends now, and I'm like,
how cool is that?
Joe,
so cool.
Effing
Joe
freaking
Walsh.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. And he loved us. And I was like, don't love me. You're freaking me out. You're too cool. Like, get out of here.
There's another guy that finally got out of his own way.
Oh my gosh.
And his journey's been pretty fascinating.
He's very inspiring.
Yeah. Yes. He's like sober.
Those are the people that you run across that you can learn great life lessons from.
And we did.
You know what he said? I was asking him, because we were in the moment of like real defeat in December, and I was going through postpartum. It was just like a crap storm of stuff. And I said, Mr. Walsh, like, did you ever have it? He's like, call me Joe. I'm like, I'm not calling you Joe. Mr. Walsh, did you ever have moments of like defeat? Kind of the same question I asked you. And he's like, oh, absolutely. But you just like, you just got to push through it. And he's like, you know, and whenever the record label is giving you trouble, he's like, I just walk into the record label and I just go and walk out. I'm not kidding. Isn't that what he said?
Man of few words.
And his wife said he actually does that, and it's very embarrassing. And
we've yet to try it out, obviously.
I know,
but
luckily we have good people at our label that love us and would laugh if we did that. But he was like, if anyone's ever given you trouble in this business, you just go and walk out. And I was like,
okay, Mr. Walsh.
Okay, yes, sir.
You got it.
So I had a gun drawn on me at the White House once.
No.
Surely it was somebody.
Did you bring in and spill the tea?
Would you have something to smoke in your pocket?
No, it's nowhere. It's nowhere near as bad as it sounds. But so I was playing for this guy named Stephen Cochran, and we got up there and we got the tour of the White House and see all the rooms, everything. So you're supposed to have your cell phone off. Well, I did, but as soon as we got out there on the porch, I reached in my pocket and turned my phone on, and this guy, one of the Secret Service dudes, or whatever, pulls his damn machine gun up, got the helmet on, and everything. Sir, put your phone back in your pocket. It's like, God,
oh, I would have.
Oh my gosh.
So then Stephen
you
was.
You can like set off bombs with those things.
Apparently.
But then Stephen
yes,
was.
Yes, that's why. I mean, you could trigger a bomb with your cell phone.
Stephen well, was up in front be. Of us all, and he turns around. And he's like, that's got to be one of my guys. And turns around, of course, it was me, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Over cell phone.
So I put my BlackBerry Curve back in my pocket, you know.
Yeah. Man, they were trying to get us drunk at the White House. We went for the Christmas tree lighting, and they literally had like a champagne guy assigned to each guest.
You would take like
one sip. More champagne. Like, I'm like, and mind you, my baby's 2 months, and so, and I'm breastfeeding. I'm like, I can't, you know, be like getting turnt at the White House. And
turnt.
I'm like, you know,
I'm gonna get turnt.
And then I'm
here,
not
boy.
Gonna be like, hey, Dr. Biden, hey, President. You know, I don't want to be that. But he's, I mean, they filled our glasses up like 7 times. I'm like,
we would enjoy that.
Oh my gosh,
I definitely had to get a little good buzz going.
Oh, for sure. And then by the time, I mean, we had to wait like an hour and a half till the president and the first lady like made it into the room, because you know it's like they're all secret and all the crazy stuff, and oh, I would never want to be the president ever.
He's working on it. He's got a brilliant question. I know you got something brilliant.
Did you say you drove from Dallas to Nashville a lot?
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh
when,
yeah.
How old were y'all when you did that? 15, did, and did you 15, drive 16. Together?
So we didn't have our licenses yet, so our parents had to drive us. Okay. Bless them. But once I got my permit, my dad was like, you're taking a shift. So yeah, we would drive like either we would stay at Tay's house in Oklahoma.
We'd like take weeks off and stay at each other's houses.
And then that set of parents would take us to Nashville, and then she'd come to my house, and then our parents would, you know, so.
He's from Waco.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What
the
a
home of Dr. Pepper.
Oh Whoa! My gosh. I love me some Dr. Pepper.
DP.
That's one of my comfort foods, if that counts.
That's my initials.
My gosh. My initials are MF since I got.
Wow.
It's very fitting.
yeah, I was like, ooh, I feel a little more badass now.
Well, ladies, I have sure enjoyed myself today. We've been talking for a long time.
This has filled my cup. Speaking of things that fill your soul and your cup, like this is, and so when we start our podcast, you're going to be one of our guests.
Absolutely honored. Yes.
You have so much just like wisdom and wonderful things.
Yeah. All that. Yeah, I've learned a lot from falling down a bunch.
Oh, but that's the thing is like we get the luxury of being the sponges where we get to learn from some of the most brilliant people.
So, anything that we haven't talked about that you want to get off your chest, or tell us about where your tour is going to be, or any information or stuff.
Well, if anyone's got any chickens, I probably need some more.
Maybe that would be a nice gift to start giving our guests. We get some baby chickens. Yes, chickens.
A giveaway of chickens.
Yeah. Luna needs some friends.
Here's your chicken.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
Una, Luna, and Tuna.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's perfect. But thank you so. This has been such a joy.
Thank
like
you,
we've just had the best time.
Thank you.
I know.
You. Thank
Hope we
you.
Can do it now. Now, when we see each other at our festivals and stuff, we've got a relationship where we say
know.
Hello to each other.
Oh yeah.
Visit,
oh,
nice.
And I'll try
yeah.
to keep some mimosas around.
Oh my gosh! No, we will bring you the mimosas next.
Our turn.
Time. Yeah, our turn to host.
Ladies and gentlemen, Maddie and Tay.
Yay!
Thank you.